Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Welcome to a live broadcast of Unfiltered.
Check.
Yeah, we're on.
I have nothing.
We're on, right, Jack? Yeah. This is a live broadcast of Unfiltered. This is your co-host, Aaron Fitzpatrick, with Brian DeMarco, who is currently plugging in his headsets. He was not the only missing link to get this started here. But today is the 7th of February. We're broadcasting from Roberta's in Bushwick. And this is a post-Super Bowl sort of newscast that I wanted to talk to Brian about because he used to work for many years with Anheuser-Busch. And Giants fans are still reeling, and I wanted to get your opinion, Brian, on the Super Bowl ads, which seem to be kind of a mixed review.
You mean the show between the game?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think the one ad that sticks out to me the most, and we'll get back to the Bud stuff because I think it was quite interesting, but the Chrysler ad, you know, with the you know, the whole Clint Eastwood and Detroit's back. I thought that was really, it could have been the beginning of a political ad, right? It could have been Obama saying, we brought this country back and we our investment in Detroit has paid off. But then they pull it back in and make it an ad about Detroit and an ad about Chrysler. I thought it was really well done. I thought, I mean, obviously, everything on the Super Bowl for an ex-ad person is ham-fisted and overdone. I think all those ads, I mean, are either amazing or they're meant for that moment. But in this instance, I think it really pulled your heartstrings because you really wanted, you almost wanted it to be, you know, a good thing at the end, and you wanted to see American industry be back. So for that, I thought it was great. And the Bud stuff, I mean, I don't
the
know.
Bud? Are you saying butt or bud?
But. Bud. I think the Prohibition ad was outstanding. I think that was outstanding. I think the Bud Light stuff is...
That was the one that's like delivering since 1860 or something like
I think that ad was outstanding. I think it was well done. I think it touched on... the history of our country, the history of Bud in the context of Prohibition, and it talked about how the product is still relevant. So for me, it hit all the things that are necessary for that type of ad. And then the later stuff with Bud Light, you know, was
the little dog Wego.
Well, I mean, it was predictably cheesy, which is what you need for something like that. It needs to be a bit more out there and talk to the youth. You know, Bud is famous for being the heartstrings ad. Clyde, pull out the Clydesdales, pull out the Christmas spirit, and then on some stuff. And then they have other ads which are meant to make you laugh. I mean, who can't remember I Love You Man and all these other ads? They're very, very famous Bud Light ads. And I think the Bud Light Platinum missed completely. I wasn't sure what that was supposed to do. Did you even see that?
Yeah, that's a, well, yeah, that's like a new, stronger
line extension.
Yeah.
I didn't know. I wasn't quite sure why that existed or what the need of it was. But anyway.
Anyway,
overall, I thought it was pretty well done.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. What did you think?
Yeah, I thought it was, okay. I thought there were some ads that seemingly were, that had been introduced already so that they were in the first half of the Super Bowl. They'd already broadcasted somewhere beforehand. Some of them, like the Doritos ad, seemed like it was a little bit poorly done. I don't know if you remember that one with the grandmother who
I think the,
catapulted the little baby to grab the bag. It just seemed like the quality actually wasn't that good. But
well, it's not even the quality. I think they're just ham-fisted. I just think that there's you're trying to reach a, think about who the Doritos eater is now, so you, hopefully that's funny to them, but I mean I just think there's so many different ways to execute an ad like that. And I'm not sure they did it the best way they could.
I hadn't had Doritos in probably a good 12 years, and I designated Sunday to crack open a bag or two, and I gotta say they were pretty satisfying.
No, they're amazing. No, they're as far as the junk food that is like right there.
Yeah,
I mean, the only thing that's even better, and you have the resonance on your fingertips to show for it, is the Cheeto.
Cheeto is
the creme de la creme of like white trash, sort of like rub it off your fingers type of snack food. But luckily, we're here today to talk about a much much different product and a much higher end sort of piece of resistance, a reason that we are even here. Would you like to introduce our next guest?
Yes, I would. We have the director of Cobrand, the PR director of Cobrand, Mary Beth Bentwood, joining us today. And yeah, you could just grab a little microphone there. That works.
Okay, great.
Yeah, I think so.
Perfect.
Okay. Well, welcome.
Thank you. Hi.
Hello.
I like welcome. The Dorito segment to champagne.
It's a segue.
It's perfect.
It's a segue, right?
But it did make me think, though, that champagne and sparkling is very much like Madonna. And I would like to hear what you thought.
Old or new Madonna?
Well, the one that performed during the halftime. What'd you think?
Thumbs down over here.
Right?
Yeah.
I think it was, I think she showed up and got paid.
I thought she was finally acting her age, you know, and that's what the New York Times said, because everyone else was, you know, doing the tricks around her. She just really didn't have much mojo.
Yeah. She was also wearing like 4-inch heels, which didn't really help her out on the stadium stands.
Yeah, but she did those cartwheels with assistance.
Uh-huh.
It was a bizarre show.
It was a bizarre show.
One vote for Madonna from the booth back here.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. Happy Jack.
Yeah, sorry.
What about Madonna versus Black Eyed Peas, Jack? I'm going to ask you that one.
Madonna.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
I don't think it was that bad. I mean, first of all, she did get her that one. I guess there was something. What is that? Ricky, You're So Fine. Who sings that?
Oh, gosh, who was it? It's Oh, Mickey.
Oh, Mickey, yeah.
The big 80s hit.
Oh, Madonna, You're So Fine. So I feel like her new song was reminiscent of that.
Yeah.
And I felt like it was so not age appropriate for who she is. It was like, I didn't think that new song really did anything for anybody. But, you know, if she's
except
in
for her.
For her, well, yeah. I think but going back to like the Vogue, and I think that was well done from a tactical standpoint, the way that it was executed on the field and the amount of...
I like the lights in the stands. I see that was like almost
was
like
amazing.
A city that was lit up in the background, which was pretty cool.
And the fact that they can put that on and get it up and down in 12 minutes is amazing. So as far as the stage crew and the show itself, I thought it was amazing. But Madonna, whatever, she won an Oscar this year or whatever she won, a Golden Globe. And
yeah.
Her speech at the Golden Globes was hideous, but that's a whole other topic.
Yeah. I missed it, but kudos on all of the production values. Yeah.
It was really good.
Yeah, it sparkled.
So you think...
nice segue.
You think California Sparkling is Madonna? Is that what
absolutely
you're...
not.
Really?
No. Maybe it's an Anne Hathaway.
Wow.
Right? I mean, it's youthful, it's sexy, it's invigorated. I don't know. It's not Madonna at all.
Maybe, Aaron, then maybe English Sparkling is more Madonna.
Perhaps. Let's save that for another day. Yeah.
Another show.
It's a special vintage, no matter what it is, if it's Madonna.
Mm-hmm.
and we have all non-vintage today.
Right.
So, do you want me to tell you what we have?
Yeah.
Well, first, tell us a little bit about yourself and what, and tell us how you
got
to
be. Well, I'm
the
oldest of eight. So, I direct PR for Cobrand. And I'm a control freak. I'm not.
Oldest of eight? You have to be. You're a surrogate mother.
Yes, you really are. But you learn to stage events all the time and to control messaging and make sure you're,
That's awesome.
One very specific message gets out. But
don't cross the street without someone.
Yeah. Yes, right? Or don't go to a party without sparkling.
Nice.
But so I manage the wine division of Cobrand, and we've been around since 1944, so a long time. So, and usually my job is to bring a winemaker here and introduce them to you, but our winemaker wasn't able to join us. We were supposed
to. So what
type
of brands does Cobrand have, just so people that are sort of novices in the business?
Premium wines, classics. We introduced Tattinger, the champagne, to the U.S.
Yes.
We introduced Louis Jadot to the U.S. Mm-hmm. We also found Beefeater and introduced that to the U.S.
Nice.
Someone else handles that now. Mm-hmm. We also introduced Sassicaia.
Sure. Big
so,
ones, yeah.
We have very long-term relationships, and we work with really great producers.
Mm-hmm.
Quality is really the cornerstone of all the relationships.
How much has your company grown in or stayed sort of consistent in the past decade?
We've taken on a couple of new brands from Spain, Bodegas Roda, which is from the Duero.
Mm-hmm.
We've taken on a beautiful Pinot Noir from Patagonia, Argentina, Barda, I feel like I'm on NPR because every foreign word I use, I'm going to pronounce it the way
Perfect.
The foreigner
would.
This is one of my things too. I can't wait till you're done. Go
ahead. Awesome. who else do we? We're bringing in Alta Vista. We're taking that now. The Argentinian producer. So we've been expanding in the New World regions, and you know,
but selectively.
Yeah. Sort of going for the premium producers, and then we're bringing in our own brand right now, which is called The Seeker, and it's a Pinot Noir from France, and then a Malbec from Argentina. It's you know, about six different wines from around the globe that we own. Yeah.
Good stuff. So tell us what you've brought today and the theme of today.
Well, it's Valentine's Day. So it's
is this our Valentine's Day show, Raren? I mean,
yeah, we're gonna designate this as I don't know what's up for next week. So we thought the week prior, get everyone ready, be able to get to the store and get some sparkling wine.
Yeah.
So give them a week's notice.
And I see a bottle of rosé sparkling over there. So I think they're
What says I love you more than rosé than champagne Tattinger rosé? This is a prestige rosé, and you know, I love bubbles. I don't know how you guys feel about bubbles.
We're bubble freaks over here. Yeah. Right.
Like I could drink them every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I drink them not all the time. We're not going to tell my boss that. but I, you know.
Occupational hazard. Let's move on.
but with a meal, you know, it doesn't have to just be the aperitif.
Sure.
Can go great with steak, great with chicken, pork. I love it. Okay.
We do have an assistant in the studio today, Mr. John Chapsky. He's sitting in for Lucy Liu, our production assistant. So, John, would you like to help Ms. PR Queen with a bottle?
I know. It's like I've never opened one of these.
She's got
before.
It under control.
I think so. John's like, hasn't moved a finger. Give me the pop. I want the pop. Nice.
Music to my ears. Okay. So, let's see.
So, Tanger, that is the only champagne that you represent in the co-brand portfolio then? Okay.
I mean, you obviously have some domestic sparkling as well.
Yes, a couple of which she's brought today. But I was just curious whether or not you've sort of honed in on the region of Champagne with this one particular brand.
Well, I mean, this is... It's funny, this... when people think about current grower champagnes or some of the bigger brands, I think that Tanger is, you know, it's in that mix, but it isn't the number one, two, or three thing that people think about. I'm just being honest for our listeners. But here's my juxtaposition. If you talk to any girl who has traveled to France and has a poster on her wall in her room, it is the Tanger poster with the champagne glass and the elegant woman. That poster is ubiquitous to me. I mean, I've seen this in, or maybe it's just the women that I know, and that could be more of a sign of me than a sign of them. But the reality is that I think that poster is so iconic and represents so much of the spirit and the, you know, the DNA of the brand.
Absolutely. That was it was an image created in the 1980s, actually, but it harkens back to an aesthetic of the 1950s, and it's that classic Grace Kelly type blonde hair up in a twist with the
pearls.
strapless black dress silhouetted behind a champagne flute, and it just is strikingly elegant, which I think Tattinger Champagne sort of strives to be with their predominant Chardonnay style, which is really what they're known for.
Yeah. Quite good, though.
So this is the Prestige Rosé. I think it's 50%. Yeah, 50% Pinot Noir, 30 Chard, and then 20 the Pinot Meunier.
And it's non-vintage, right?
Yep, non-vintage.
Mm-hmm. Really like the minerality.
Do you
really
do vintage? Do you do vintage rosé?
We don't do a vintage rosé.
I didn't think so.
But we do a vintage Blanc de Blanc.
I know that.
Which is got to be one of the best wines on the planet. I mean, I may be biased, but Comte de Champagne.
Comte de Champagne is incredible.
Spectacular.
And the bottle itself is quite incredible.
It's gorgeous. And if you haven't had the 2000, we will have some of that. It is amazing. It's gorgeous. Mm. We won't have it today, but we'll have it some other time. It's
you can send it to the show and make sure when you send it to Jack, our producer, you put my name on it because it will go missing. Jack.
Jack, it doesn't taste good at all. You don't want to try it.
Perfect.
Well, maybe that's something we'll crack for our 100th episode, which is coming up in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, actually, it's two. This is our 98th episode, Aaron.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Cheers to your 98th.
Thank you. Cheers. Thanks for bringing this. This is delicious.
Isn't it a beautiful color? Mm-hmm. If you know, it's like a copper penny, sort of salmon color.
Yeah, it's salmon-y and it's really elegant. And I know these glasses are not the typical champagne glasses, but the bead is quite really fine bead on this, and it's quite elegant.
Great acidity too,
really persistent mousse, great mouthfeel, and the acidity, it makes it such a good food wine.
Yeah, I was actually in Champagne for the harvest this past September, which was a bit disconcerting to see how much difficulty it sort of kept for a lot of the farmers there. How did Tattenjay fare in that?
It's a hard vintage overall.
Yeah,
they won't be making a Comte de Champagne from this year for sure. I think it's interesting because it wasn't a good vintage in California either.
Right.
You know, so I think globally we're also just sort of looking at the effects of global warming, which is interesting for grower champagnes. Do you know Michael Steinberger? He used to be.
I do.
Yeah. So I had an interesting conversation with him about champagne and the rise of grower champagne, which has been exciting to see these small growers come to the market with these beautiful offerings. And he was saying that it's coincided with the most consistent decade of vintages we've ever had. And so sort of the upside of global warming is you don't have to blend it. You can be a small producer and use your grapes and do a beautiful champagne. The question is, how long will that last?
Right.
You know,
it's also people's vanity, because I think for a long time, growers, let's call them farmers, were quite content to get a guaranteed dollar amount or euro amount for their bushel, for basket of goods. And they did the farming, they did a good job. And then they realized that their goods, their crop went into a larger thing. Like Veuve Clos owns, you know, hundreds and hundreds of sites.
Yeah.
And so you could never designate like, well, this is, you know, only Bollinger can really say that they have certain designated sites, and everyone else is just buying what they can. They're buying as much as they can. So the grower champagne is really the rise of the modern winemaker, and I think it's really the rise of people of the next generation of farmers who have gone to school in Bordeaux or become you know or dare we say California to UC Davis and done the wine program there. Everyone wants to be a winemaker now, and so I think if times got to were tougher in terms of climate change, in terms of it wasn't a great season every year, every other year was bad or good like it used to be, you would see families not willing to take the risk. Maybe they would make a champagne 1 or 2 years out of 10 that would be their, you know, their private stash, but the rest of it they would sell. And now it seems like, based on what you're saying, well, every year is pretty good, and with modern technology we can make a pretty consistent product every year. Why not make the money ourselves? Why sell out before we do it? And so it's really interesting to see how the big houses have responded.
I think also it coincides with the rise of the sommelier, right? So now you have these somms that want to find really interesting producers, and they want to introduce to their guests some of their favorite wines, and they want to put a signature on their wine list.
Sure.
So with those two things together, it's sort of a perfect storm.
So how do you take a brand that is elegant, old school, and stands for something, and keep it fresh to the current somm?
You take them through verticals. You really want to show the history and the legacy of the brand. You want to show the authenticity and say there's a reason why we know they've been around running this since 1931. Mm-hmm. This one family.
I just found the recipe for our 103rd show.
There you go. No, but I think
103 vintages. Perfect.
Not to, to divert the attention from Tattenjay, but when Bilkar Simon sort of repositioned themselves in the New York market in the past year or year and a half, they actually hosted a vertical tasting
going back to, I think it was only till like 95 or something like that, but you know, showcasing 12 different vintages for sommeliers that they hosted, and it really gave a good scope of the offerings available from that brand. And I think it's really helped them, especially in the New York market. We took it on at the restaurant that I worked at as a sommelier for 3 years, and people were really taking to it, and it hadn't been available for a long time on a wider scale. So I think also that helped reintroduce it to a clientele who hadn't had access to it so much. Yeah,
we have, you know, incredible library tastings that a smaller producer just won't have. So you really have to bring those things to the market and let people make their own decisions.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I think we're going to make a quick break, but what I want to do is say, when we get back, we have three more to get through, and I can't wait to get back. So thank you for this beautiful rosé, and we'll see you in a couple minutes.
Together we can see what we will find. Don't leave me alone at this time, for I'm afraid of what I will discover inside. That I would find a home within the fragile substance of my soul, and I have filled this void with things unreal, and all the while my character it steals.
Welcome back to Unfiltered. This is Aaron Fitzpatrick.
I'm Brian DeMarco.
Good. And we're broadcasting live Tuesday, 4 p.m. every Tuesday. And you can find our archives, www.heritageradionetwork.com. All of our shows are there. And
also on iTunes.
All teens as well. Yeah.
You can, on iTunes, it's Unfiltered Radio. And if you type in Unfiltered in iTunes, you'll pick up our show. And but we can never get to the next segment without giving our shout out to Roberta's, and that we are live here at Roberta's every Tuesday. And so thank you for the pizza and the beer, guys. We appreciate it.
Keeping us well fueled. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
As is this champagne and sparkling wine that Mary Beth Bentwood has brought us. She's our guest today and the PR director for Cobrand. So joining for the second half of the show, we're going to start off with the Domaine Carneros, which is a Tanager property in California.
Oh,
there it goes. Yeah.
What could be a better segue, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you've become like a top five guest. If every time if your lead in every time is a cork of, you know, a champagne cork popping, then I think it's you're good to go.
Sound effects included.
Yes.
So Domaine Carneros was a project by the Tattinger House. They started about 25 years ago. Claude Tattinger, Tattinger's a family-owned company, wanted to find a California property to produce sparkling. And looked for about 3 years and then found property in Carneros, which straddles Sonoma and Napa. Mm-hmm. And hired Eileen Crane, who had been making sparkling wine, over at Gloria Ferrer.
Okay.
And then came there and she built it. She, you know, oversaw the construction and has been the founding winemaker since it started. And she has been making wine, sparkling wine, longer than anybody else in the U.S.
Really? Wow.
Is that true?
Yeah. 35 vintages.
Wow. All right.
Yeah.
All right. So let's get a mouthful of this. Okay. Thank you, my dears. It's like straw colored and
And for our listeners who are going to pick up something for the holiday, how much does this retail for, Mary Beth? Or range?
Yeah, I mean, you know, 25 is sort of the high spot. Mm-hmm. You can find it for anywhere from 20 to 25.
Great.
Yeah. And we're looking at 60% Pinot, 40% Chardonnay. And the vintage is 2007. So, you know, still, I would say, even though Eileen Crane is a winemaker, she tries to make it in a Tattinger style. Mm-hmm. So always going for that elegance and finesse. And there's always that kind of a streamline to it. It's very direct. A great acidity right down the mm-hmm. backbone of the wine.
Mm-hmm. What's the total production of Domaine Carneros in terms of sparkling?
It's really small. Really small. Under 200,000.
Bottles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. And you know, it's misleading because the I want to say the total case production is like 40,000. It's not big at all. And the challenge is it has this big chateau, and it looks like it's this big mammoth, right? And that is the winery. The tanks are inside there. Mm-hmm. The cellar is underneath there, and that's what the size is from. So it's. I mean, you've spent time in, sure, in Napa, and yep. I'm sure you've seen it as you drive up.
Isn't there a nice restaurant there as well?
They have a great small plates.
Okay,
you know, and mm-hmm. so they have these pairings that mm-hmm. you can do there.
A friend of mine, Jessica, she does her production out of Domaine Carneros.
Yeah,
and she yes, and I was I visited her quite recently and. They do some Pinot out of there and mm-hmm. some Chardonnay out of mm-hmm. there, mm-hmm. and so you also are the wineries also use this facility for very select independent winemakers
yeah.
can work there. So it's a very full farm. I think people think it's one of these tourist attractions, which it is indeed, but it also is a very functioning and well-oiled machine as far as a winery, and it sits on top of the hill there, and people, you know, it's like, oh, let's take the tour, but you know, people are getting a lot of work done there.
Yeah.
And so it's not just a tasting room, it's an active facility, so it does belie its size in terms of what you were saying, you know, how big it looks compared to what's happening.
Yeah.
But there's you know, all the production's happening there, so
They have another winemaker, TJ Evans, and he's their Pinot Noir winemaker.
I've met TJ.
Have you had his Pinot Clair?
I have not.
He does a white Pinot Noir.
Oh, neat.
That will knock your socks off. That thing it's gorgeous and Burgundian, and I pour it for people, and they're like, what is this?
Neat. You know,
it's gorgeous.
Out. Yeah.
And he does it in a concrete egg fermenter.
Oh, cool.
So it definitely that's a tiny production, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But that's worth getting directly from the winery, and they do some beautiful Pinots as well.
This has a nice richness, almost like it had extended lease contact or something.
4 years.
Okay.
4 years on mm-hmm, lease. Mm-hmm. Eileen Crane has been committed to quality since the beginning, and she is a perfectionist in the truest sense. So she started farming sustainably only because the fruit tasted better. This mm-hmm. is when she first started. And then in 2005, they received their, what is it? It's like California Certified Organic Farming Certificate, which is the highest standards for mm-hmm. organic, mm-hmm. and all of their estate fruit. So all of the fruit that they owned is organic. And in 2003, she put the largest photovoltaic energy collectum system in the world on the winery.
Wow.
And all of a sudden she's giving seminars in Napa on how to go solar.
Right.
So she's really been at the forefront mm-hmm. with quality and just
sustainability.
Responsible well, yeah. winemaking.
Yeah.
You know, just
ahead
in terms
of
her footprint. Yeah.
Yeah. Excellent.
So tell me about the drinker of this property versus the drinker of the French property.
So Tattinger is going to be an international clientele, right? Very global. And Domaine Carneros, it actually does have distribution in the UK, but it is primarily domestic. Mm-hmm. 70% is consumed in California. Big,
wow.
Big California market. And predominantly female. Mm-hmm. They have one of the oldest wine clubs and the largest. There's an interesting... connection between people in the wine club. When we host an event for them, they come out in droves. Mm-hmm. So the women that are members love this brand. And I think they love sort of the romantic chateau, and mm-hmm. they've gone there. You know, there's a beautiful, beautiful view of the
winemaker.
It's a real deal. It's a famous house. It's a female winemaker. There's a property that it's not like a mailing list where it's a garage wine. This has got some gravitas.
Yeah, it's aged on lees. It's organic. And Eileen has been making wine for 35 years. So
how big are the really cellars? How many bottles can you store in the cellar? I mean,
that's a question for Eileen.
I was downstairs, but I didn't go down the tube.
Yeah. No, but they have a really diverse range of offerings. Mm-hmm. You know, they also do the Blanc de Blanc, the Lerève. The 2005 just came out, which is beautiful. We did a library tasting back to 1988 recently. And then they've got the rosé, two different rosés, and then a whole offering of Pinot Noirs and even, Chardonnay and the Pinot Clar. Neat. So pretty good
stuff. So the Pinot Clar, you said, is probably only available via the direct sort of wine sales on the internet or the winery itself. If you go to the tasting room and buy it there, it's not really going to be seen in stores.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
But, you know, Eileen has this funny story with, we were doing a tasting of Lerève, which is their Blanc de Blanc mm-hmm. in the 2005. And there was the Japanese distributor there. And, you know, he wanted some for his daughter's wedding.
Yeah.
And she said to him, well, I'm not sure how much you need. You know, we're just releasing it. And you might want to let it age a little bit more. When's the wedding? And he looked at her and he said, oh, she's only 4 years old.
No.
Okay. So that also just speaks to the age worthiness of that wine.
Wow.
Wow.
I heard a pop.
Usually that's your lead in. Okay, so this is the Prosecco.
We're hitting the global sparkling wine.
Perfect.
Category here, which is great.
This is DOC Prosecco Brut. Mm-hmm. And what... it's from a town that I know. Okay, great. What do you know the alcohol content here?
Oh, gosh.
It's 11
check,
and a half.
I want to say 11.
11 and a half.
Yeah.
11 and a half. Okay, great. So, Vino Spumante, and it's typical quality and aromatics. So it's saying that it's basically...
It's a very Italian thing to put on the label.
Typico. Trying to tell you it's not, it's what you would expect.
Right, light.
Right.
Yeah. Light, lots of fruit flavors, lots of primary fruit.
And anything in particular about this producer that... tells a story or is something
the story is really in the wine.
Yeah.
Try it and tell me what you think. I think it's sort of your prototypical Prosecco.
Uh-huh.
Like it's very straightforward, really bright, really crisp, really light. Like super bright nose.
Mm-hmm.
What does this go for retail?
15.
So it's a head-to-head to Winebow's property. Mm-hmm.
Get a really bright pear in there, mm-hmm. which is one of those trademark Prosecco mm-hmm. qualities.
That's nice. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's obviously outclassed by the first two offerings.
Yes.
By a lot. But it's quite interesting.
It's a different animal entirely.
Yeah,
just because it has bubbles doesn't mean it's going to be similar at all.
Mm-hmm.
It just happens to have the effervescence.
Right.
But this is great afternoon,
yep.
sort of on the terrace,
this
right?
This is afternoon delight,
right?
Yeah.
Also,
a little
to
charcuterie.
Me, mm-hmm. yeah, a nice little salumi next to that,
absolutely.
Right? The protein
yep.
with that. This would be beautiful contrasted, I think, against something really savory and salty,
mm-hmm.
like great with potato chips, because it's just the absolute opposite.
Yeah, yeah.
Or a jug of fresh squeezed orange juice.
Great for cocktails.
Thank you, Brian.
just saying, if you know.
No, a lot of people do cava with cocktails. I think Prosecco is the better sparkling for cocktails.
I think it depends on the cocktail, personally.
I think it depends on the cava and the Prosecco, too.
True.
Case-by-case scenario here, yeah. Well, just for sake of time, we're going to move into the...
No, we need a corkscrew for this one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, really? All right.
Bring one.
All right.
I have one in my bag. Hold on.
Okay.
Yeah. While Brian is looking for that, We'll talk about this next, the fourth wine that Mary Beth has brought, which is a Moscato d'Asti. And during the break, I was just speaking about, I believe it was Letty Teague who wrote an article around the first of the year when you're sort of predicting the next year's trends. And for 2012, she had said Moscato d'Asti was going to be the next big thing. And it had kind of caught my attention because I had, you know, it's one of those things, especially working in restaurants for many years, where you try to get that last dessert wine sale, and it's harder than, you know, it sounds sometimes, especially when you're also offering something that's sparkling. You know, if it's something by the glass, you have to make sure that you're moving through that quickly. And if it's something by the bottle, who's going to commit to a half bottle of sparkling wine for dessert? So it's an interesting category. And I was surprised to see that. So I was just curious to see your take on that.
Well, have you personally seen any uptick, you know, in the on-premise in restaurants? Have you seen?
Yes.
Yeah.
In Moscato d'Asti specifically, Brian? Or dessert wine category?
Dessert wine category for the seasonality is obviously a bit up. But in general, Moscato is a retail phenomenon. Here's your bottle, MBB.
Okay, one second. Just need a little sip of water here.
And speaking of the Asian market, actually, it seems that that has been something that's grown, particularly in the that category as well.
I think the Moscato is not made for the Asian market, but it's perfect for it. Mm-hmm. Except that it's not red, right? Yeah. It's really sweet.
Well, that's where Brichetto comes in.
Yeah,
it's really amazing.
Yeah.
So we're looking at 5% alcohol here.
So, I had a very funny scenario with one of my Chinese clients, and he we had sold him some Cheval Blanc, and he said, you know, This wine to me is on par with Lafite, and I think that I can turn my customers onto it, and the price is so much better. Meanwhile, so much better was,
you know, all in context.
All in context, yeah. Marginally better, you know, 600, 700 a bottle versus 1200 a bottle. So I said, well, this is great. You know, here's the list, and here's what we can provide, and how interested are you in this? He's like, well, I'll tell you what. I'll take half of all that you have right now. And if you can talk to the winery for me and you could get them to say that it's Cheval Rouge, then I could sell $1 million a month.
Really?
And I said, what? He said, yeah, well, because the Cheval Blanc, people think it's white wine.
Right, right.
They don't know what it is. But if you could say that it's Cheval Blanc Rouge, and I emailed him back and said, I'm not even sure I understand what you're saying, because this is either I'm being pranked or this is like, you know the wine version of Alan Funt, or you're just so naive that you have no idea what it, you know, that you can't just go to Cheval Blanc and say, oh, can we do a private label? We'll call it Cheval Rouge. And he was like, but I'm dead serious. The customer doesn't know what it is. And so I just thought that was really interesting. You said basically the Chinese market, you know, it's a dynamic market, and that's where a lot of the French money is going right now. And I completely get it from not only an intellectual standpoint, but from a moving boxes standpoint, I totally get it. But your point exactly, red wine is it.
Yeah.
And trying to sell this type of wine is very difficult.
Right.
And I think we're still looking at sort of some of the urban markets here in the U.S. are really into this type of wine. And I think, quite frankly, you know, the female after work crowd could really get into this. And I'm curious whether you think you could do cocktails with this.
You could, but I would say, why would you want to? Mm-hmm. I mean, with the Moscato in general, yes. Not with this specific producer. This is Michele Chiarlo's Nivolé Vintage.
Well, tell us about this
2010.
One.
I'm agnostic, but if there was a heaven, this is what I would be served when I went into it.
Mm-hmm.
That's presuming that I might get there. you know, it's like apricot and melon. And
yeah, little honeyed notes, orange blossom, like, but finishing dry. Yeah. And yeah,
it just drinks like liquid honey, but without that cloying quality. To me, this is heaven in a bottle. It's like liquid gold. It's spectacular. And it's one of those, if the first time you're introducing it to someone, they just look at you and they go, wow.
Well, yeah, I feel like this wine over some perfect vanilla bean ice cream with, like, maybe that's it.
Yeah.
I have to interject because I had, you know, the Italian wine bar craze, which obviously took hold in the past decade in New York City. I had a glass of Moscato d'Asti at Eno maybe 2 years back with a truffled egg toast with that asparagus and truffle. And it was just the bomb pairing I've had ever in my life. It was amazing. So I'm going to interject there and say, a little truffle and egg with this.
Sometimes savory is the way to go with the sweet.
Well, yeah, it's obvious. I mean, they've been saying like Riesling and spicy food forever. And it's like the default answer when people don't know what to pair with Riesling. They go, oh, Asian food. Yeah. But I feel like this covers so many things. Like you could have even the pizza here at Roberta's.
I know, I was thinking of the Jesus Christ.
The Jesus right? Christ pizza here at Roberta's, and this wine would be off the hook.
Should we order some?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Absolutely.
I was promised pizza.
You're going to get it.
But you will get you'll get the Steppenwolf or the Speckenwolf. That's my favorite.
Ooh, that sounds delicious. Yeah, I think some pancetta with this would be gorgeous.
Yes, nice. Yes,
yeah.
Jack, do you hear my order? It's going live.
Yeah, he's happy to hear that order because we're getting kicked out of the studio for the next show that's on upcoming. So
this
big
has been great.
Thank you to you. Yeah.
Thank you guys. It's fun.
This is really fun. Let's make sure to take this, the rosé, and back to the table with us. So
definitely.
After the show here. So, but MBB, this has been great. I really loved having you on.
I'm gonna go start making wine so I can come on next time with my own wines. No, just
fast
kidding.
Friends, fast friends, yeah. Thanks so much for listening. Signing off. This is Aaron Fitzpatrick.
And it's Brian DeMarco.
And we're joined by the lovely guest, Mary Beth Bentwood, today from Cobrand, the PR director, who introduced us to 4 awesome sparkling wines. So thanks for joining and hope to have you on again.
Take care.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.